This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and this morning we have a couple different people who are talking about best practices in asset management for solar PV energy systems. Rick Brown is an expert in this field, so I'd like to introduce him. Rick Brown is with Terra Verde Renewable Partners. Rick, why don't you go ahead and start us out and discuss a little bit about what you want to talk about.
Thanks, Sierra, and welcome, everybody. So as I was mentioning, we're based here out in California. Actually, our new name is Terra Verde Energy because besides doing asset management and project development support for solar, we're also now doing it for storage and for energy conservation measures. So the topic today is going to be solar, but if there's any follow-up questions around other kinds of energy devices, we can certainly talk about that. We're working with over 50 different school districts, cities, counties, water agencies, transit districts, and so forth here. And what we've learned over the years are there some really critical pieces of an asset management program that is focused on making sure that these solar facilities meet the promise, that they deliver the energy savings and equally, in some cases, more important, the financial savings that were promised. The four major categories of best practices are in monitoring and monitoring response, real time, reactive or corrective maintenance, preventive maintenance, which gets into warranty enforcement, and then the fourth category is reporting and savings analysis. I'm going to turn it over, actually, to our Vice President of Asset Management, David Burdick, to drill down a little bit more detail about each of these areas, and then we'll move it on to specific questions.
Well, good morning, everybody. As Rick mentioned, my name is David Burdick, VP of Asset Management, and happy to add to the discussion. As Rick mentioned, those four critical areas, let me just maybe expound on those briefly. The monitoring piece, everyone who has developed a solar project should have access to the monitoring for that system and likely do. The problem is that after the initial week or two or the first few months of that project coming online, typically those monitoring platforms are neglected or at best reviewed by someone who doesn't have a clear path on analyzing alerts or responding to those in the appropriate ways. And so one of the most important pieces to an asset management strategy is identifying the right person to daily be checking on the performance of that system. In many cases, monitoring platforms have excellent alert features that very quickly can inform the response that's needed, whether it's a production loss issue where there's an immediate response needed by a qualified technician, or maybe it's just a communication error, in which more likely the right response is a phone conversation that's likely got something more like a 48 to 72-hour response to it. So, again, the key starting point is making sure that someone is doing the work of daily checking on the performance of those systems. The reactive maintenance piece or the corrective maintenance, it's important to have first a strategy around who's supposed to be responding to what types of maintenance needs. There should be warranties issued by the installer and the manufacturer for the equipment and the installation. And in most cases, early on in the life of the system, those reactive needs should be the responsibility of the installer or the manufacturer. And so having the right information on the front end of those alerts is so important. And then being able to execute on the path to manage those warranty responses. And in the case of aging assets where maybe the warranty is expired or you're getting near that warranty expiration, that's the time to look at the cost analysis of whether it's extending the warranty if that's an option or replacing inverters. And so and that's an important piece to it. Depending on where you're at in the nation, here in California, especially in the Central Valley, a huge issue for performance of solar systems is soiling. And with the ag activities kicking up dirt year-round, there can be significant performance drops directly tied to the amount of dirt that's piling up on those panels. This is another consideration for snow loads and to parts of the nation. And so having the right strategy around who could be the trusted provider to wash or to clear off those systems, looking at the break even on when does it make most sense to wash those from a cost-benefit perspective. And so spending some time thinking through that on the front end, that way you're truly maximizing the value of that solar-generated energy. Around preventative maintenance, as Rick alluded to, an important piece is familiarizing yourselves with the conditions of the warranties. For specifically the inverters, there's going to be a list of annual maintenance needs around checking torque values on wire terminal connections. There's going to be detailed lists from the manufacturers of the kinds of things that need to be performed on a regular basis to maintain that warranty. And so that is typically an annual inspection from a certified technician who can run each of the steps in that. In addition to that, taking a look at just the physical state of the assets, looking at combiner boxes, looking at the clamp structure, looking for damaged or loose panels, and so and then reporting on that extensively to the stakeholders. And then lastly, the reporting and the savings analysis. This is what proves to be a challenging piece for many people, and so having the access to that monitoring data and then being able to analyze that in a summary format that produces some kind of an intelligible high-level assessment of how is this system performing, what kind of trends are we seeing related to the age of the asset, its maintenance needs, and then looking at the actual performance from a financial perspective. What are we saving actually from the performance of that system year over year based on the initial takeoff of the project? And so that sums up high level what's included in a robust asset management strategy.
Okay. I see we have a couple more people involved here today. John Walter, you arrived. I'm glad we got a hold of you. So, anyhow, do you have anything to add to that as far as asset management, or do you have any questions for I'm spacing out your name. I'm so sorry.
Rick and David, yeah.
David, yeah, sure. David or Rick, about that? John, are you there? John is
here.
Solar installer out in California, by the way.
And we also do some consulting for cities on looking at their assets, both whether to install and the price point of buyouts. And I'm unfortunately, I just joined, so the question I really have is, and maybe you've already covered it, so don't answer it if you have, is most of the cities that have been installed solar early on use some combination of a lease. And oftentimes there's a trigger point. In our recent experience, it's 7 to 10 years, in that lease to buy out the rest of the lease. Do you find is that common practice in your knowledge, and what does the buyouts tend to look like?
Yeah, it's a really good question, John. The reason why it's generally the option to do that comes at 7 to 10 years is because under the typical power purchase agreement arrangement where a third party owns and operates the system on behalf of the city or other public agency, that entity, that private entity, a big part of their return on their investment is the investment tax credit, the federal investment tax credit, as well as accelerated depreciation. Those tax credits burn off, so to speak, or are used up after 5 years. And the Internal Revenue Service, which manages that program, really doesn't look kindly on buyouts that occur before that five-year period. So generally, at the end of 6 years of operation is when you can begin to look at doing that buyout. And there's a number of different ways of doing that buyout. We actually, David and I are huddling tomorrow on a school district that wants to buy out their system. but they don't have the cash. I mean, that's the big obstacle sometimes, is public agencies don't necessarily have the cash available. So if they do, then it becomes a matter of negotiating with the PPA provider as to the buyout price. And it's really important that, you know, going back to David's discussion of some of the different best practices, particularly the corrective and preventive maintenance best practices, is to have a very good log of how has the system performed, what kind of maintenance issues have there been, because in that negotiation or on that buyout price, you certainly want to take into account a deep knowledge of what is the condition of the asset that you're purchasing. Now, one of the IRS rules is that you can't buy that system for anything less than what would be considered an FMV or fair market value. And that fair market value can be established in a number of different ways. We won't get into the details there. But suffice it to say that most lease agreements and PPA agreements have language that say it's going to be the greater of that fair market value or some contracted buyout price. Now, what we've been able to do, and it's important not to lose this opportunity, is don't just take the buyout price that's in that lease agreement or that PPA agreement as given. There is room to negotiate as long as you get to a price that's greater than that fair market value price. And we've had situations, this one we're talking about tomorrow, about a year ago, the PPA provider threw a price over the table that was ridiculous. It was like, this is a system that was 7 years old, and they basically wanted to sell the system for 10% less than what it cost to build 7 years ago. Well, that price, you know, we advised our client to spit on, honestly. They came back this year and brought that price down to more like 60% of what the original construction price. Now we have something to deal with, right, something to negotiate around. So that pricing question is an important one. The second issue is if the public agency doesn't have the money itself to buy it out at that time, there is a market now where there are other asset owners, solar asset owners, who are interested in buying these kinds of assets. And so what you can do is run an RFP process to select, it's essentially a refi, right? You're refinancing to select a PPA provider who in partnership with you, the city, or you, the public agency, then goes to the current PPA provider and essentially becomes the buyer. They come up with a new PPA price, frankly, that's going to 9 times out of 10 be significantly lower. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to go from having a, you know, 2, 3, 4% escalator on that PPA price to a 0% escalator. So it is a great opportunity to actually either own the system and get the full benefit or at least refi the system by bringing in a new PPA provider and getting a lower PPA price and or lease price and a, you know, a lower escalator. So that's a really good question, John. And that, you know, given that, you know, the big beginning of this current solar revolution came about within the 2, 3, 4 years after that investment tax credit law was passed in 2006, you're now getting to that place where, like you said, these systems are 6, 7, 8 years old, and people are looking at that buyout opportunity. But the linkage to the asset management is that if you, even with in a PPA situation where the city is assuming that the PPA provider is taking care of that system and doing it properly, you want to have an asset management strategy. As the, even if you don't own it, as the off-taker of those solar benefits. And we can talk about what the sort of minimum level asset management you should have if you're a PPA holder, so to speak, if people are interested.
Yeah, can you, just to jump in, could you share any, especially if they're national, any PPA secondary market, PPA buyers with Sierra?
I mean, there's, yeah, I can certainly, send her that, that information. You can share, you know, some of the ones that we've been engaging with. Sure.
That'd be great. We just are reviewing a proposal from a city to buy out. It's a local city here, and the PPA owner is trying to sell, is claiming that the discounted cash flow value of the system, the seven-year-old system, is not a fraction of the installation cost. It's a multiple of the installation cost. It's, they want three times what it costs them to put it in.
Yeah. That's well, and that's a function of the fact that it probably has a high escalator, right? And
right.
That, which was basically a ripoff to begin with. I'll be very blunt. And they want to basically take it. There are other methods of determining value versus discounted cash flow. And if John, if you cycle back with us later on, we can kind of drill down on your strategy there, help you offer some alternatives.
Oh, that's great. Okay,
client.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's a game that a lot of PPA providers want to try to pull, and it's worth pushing back. Let's put it that way.
Appreciate it.
Michael Walton, do you have anything to add to this conversation? Michael Walton's with Green Spaces in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
I've been listening. Unfortunately, PPAs are not something that have been applicable within the Tennessee Valley Authority's footprint. But it sounds great. We do have a few projects that are existing and a couple that are on the boards for publicly owned renewable generation, but it's just a little bit more direct because we can't do third party ownership. You know, it's basically just part of the city's capital budget to actually do the installation. But they are going to be so the I guess there's sort of four projects here locally. There's a community solar installation that our municipally owned utility put in, and it's called Solar Share. So they both they lease panels at I think $5 a month per panel, and you can also purchase the panels directly. There is a our local airport is working on the third phase of their solar array that'll take the airport to net zero energy, and they are going to be installing storage there to build a microgrid for that part of our smart grid. And then we've got two projects that are on the boards. One is at the wastewater treatment plant that would be solar with backup storage, and then also at basically sewer pump stations having solar with backup storage. And not surprisingly, those are really focused on resilience and water quality.
And do each of those projects have as part of the contract with the BPC or the contractor a asset management plan, a long-term asset management plan?
Yes.
And did you know, we kind of laid out those four categories. Do you know how they're handling the monitoring, corrective, reactive maintenance, preventive maintenance, and reporting? Is that
I don't.
Out.
I just don't. I don't know that. I don't know that much detail.
My recommendation is really hold them accountable, because sometimes, particularly early, you know, early in the California experience, when we go back sometimes, and in the kind of situation that John comes to us, and we're asked by a public agency to take a look at their initial contract, be it for a PPA or for, like you're talking about, where the agency owns the deal, and we look at those early contracts, and there's a paragraph that says we're going to make sure the system operates properly, and that's about it. And you know, you get what you pay for in these contracts, right? So I strongly encourage you to, you know, advise your client to make sure that in whatever final contracting they do, they include who is responsible for all those elements? Because absent a contractual delineation of responsibility, it ain't going to happen. I mean, you know.
I do feel pretty confident that was part of it. The our local power company is very sophisticated.
We're talking about Tennessee Valley Authority?
No. This is EPB, our local power company. And they installed a gigabit fiber optic backbone for the first peer certified smart grid in the country.
Oh, okay.
Cool. And so they have the ability to really finally monitor basically anything.
Yeah.
And so I feel pretty confident that they have a pretty short leash on the installer.
Cool. Yeah, that's really important.
We have a few other people in the group here. Any other comments, George Wilchie, anything to say about this?
Yeah, I was just about to speak. There's Sierra. This is George Wilchie with Clean Powerhouse, which is a consulting firm in California, and I am very experienced with PPAs over the last decade, having worked for Southern California Edison in that capacity, but no longer there. So my question is to maybe return back to the initial subject of the O&M, the operation and maintenance of these facilities and the different elements you described. What I'm looking at is my question is around the cost of O&M as it relates to the total project cost, you know, reflected in the PPA price extended over the total term, and the return on investment. Is the O&M cost a significant driver of benefits for a solar farm, large utility scale solar farm, and what do those numbers look like? Is there someone who can comment on that?
Yeah, this is David Burdick with Terra Verde Energy, and I can speak maybe briefly to that. So the pricing of the O&M, it's an important question to consider on the front end of a project, and probably more important, or at least the precursor to that, is the overall asset management strategy, right? So one of the value adds to a robust asset management strategy is that typically that's going to lower your operational costs, right? So if you structure an asset to be developed by an installer, and then you have an O&M provider who's incentivized by truck rolls and by providing services, right, those operational costs can start to overrun what they otherwise would have been set by. So having somebody who on your team or a partner who is advising the O&M from a long-term asset strategy is important. So you can significantly reduce the operational, the O&M costs if those costs are being managed by someone who's looking at the long-term ROI on the project, who's looking at the targeted cost savings, and the question of how often should a system be cleaned is directly tied to what the avoided cost savings are going to be.
From a utility scale standpoint, it's a production question, and what we're sort of alluding to here is that there is, I would not say there's any specific rule of thumb, because depending on the configuration of the system, is the size of the system makes a big difference. Bigger size, you know, obviously unit cost is less. If it's a fixed tilt versus a tracker, that's going to make a big difference in terms of what those O&M costs are going to be. If it's in an area that has a lot of soiling, then you've got not just the washing, but the impact of the soiling on the inverter performance. So, you could have a very wide range, anywhere from, say, 0.25 cents per kilowatt hour to 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour, depending on the configuration of the system. So, NREL, National Renewable Energy Lab, collects data on O&M costs for different size systems and different configurations. So I'd encourage, if you really wanted, and by region, because obviously, where in the country you're talking about, the pricing changes. They at least up until about a year ago, I know they were collecting data on this. I haven't looked at it in that, since about a year ago, but I would, David's going to look up the link right now, and we'll send that on to Sierra to share with folks.
Awesome. That's a great answer, and that really helps. Maybe if I could take one more couple of seconds here, Sierra, I'd like to explain where I'm coming from. There's a small company in Australia that's expanding worldwide right now that has developed an artificial intelligence-based system for the aircraft industry. Initially, where they look specifically at maintenance and optimizing that whole around that whole system on behalf or to assist the owner and specifically those folks who are responsible for hands-on doing the maintenance work. I am getting more and more convinced that this has very direct applications to solar and wind and other types of, energy projects. And I'm interested in exploring that opportunity. So what I'm looking at is, when I approach an owner, a developer slash owner of a solar farm, for example, can I say these are significant savings that you could generate by doing a better job of managing your maintenance? The numbers you just threw out are very significant, up to, if I convert it to dollars per megawatt hour, it's like 25, I think you said, 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour.
That would be for a very small, that's a small, say, commercial system, probably.
That makes
under
sense.
500 kW. I was giving a range of 0.25 cents to,
right.
So
$2.50 is still a very significant piece of current PPA prices for solar farms, especially in California, where they're, in range of $30 now. That helps me, and the link to NREL is a great suggestion. I'll follow up on that for sure. So thank you very much.
David just sent you, Sierra, the link. You can pass that on to everybody.
Okay, I'll be sure to do that. Any other comments here?
This is Jerry Braun. A couple of questions that relate to some experience in California that may not be, national at this point. We're in a situation where, a lot of the both public and private non-residential installations are on very long-term contracts or power purchase agreements, or lease agreements up to 25 years. Meanwhile, in California at least, there's a lot of, it's more than tinkering, it's more basic changes going on in the tariff structures and so forth. So you have a situation where, the owners or the lessees of solar installations are faced with, news from the energy, service provider, in the case of a net metered system, that, you know, things are, you know, you have this option, you have that option, and I think those choices are difficult for, you know, for folks who are not really, not weren't planning to actively manage their assets, so to speak. You also have, you know, a trend toward aggregators that are, you know, particularly starting, you know, it's already real in a demand response area. I think it's going to be real in solar. And then you have the trend to think about backfitting solar installations with energy storage. So I guess I'd be interested in, I don't mean to throw out too many issues at once, but just how do you see, you know, the asset management adapting to some of the changes that are happening in the market?
Yeah. Hey, Jerry. Rick Brown. Good to hear from you. So it's interesting. We have an RFP going out on Friday on behalf of a water agency in Southern California that already has 6 megawatts of solar. The RFP is to add an additional, I think, 16 megawatts of solar, and also to put in somewhere between 5 and 8 megawatts of solar, some of which is going to be paired with the new solar project, and some of which is going to be, like you say, backfilling or adding it to the existing solar project to improve the economics of that project around exactly the kind of changes you're talking about, you know, the increasing shift in California from generation charges to demand charges, as well as some opportunities for arbitrage. So it is all doable. It goes back to the thing that David talked about, though, earlier, which is when we were first approached by this client and, you know, we started investigating what was going on there, they really didn't have a good picture of what the performance of their original 6-megawatt project was delivering in terms of the economics. And so when we went back and said, okay, what is this solar project actually producing for you under the current net metering policy and the current rate structures that you're on? One of the things that became clear is they were on the wrong rate structure, right? Nobody had made, you know, the original rate structure they were on probably was the right one, but given some of the changes that came along, they hadn't made the change. And so we didn't talk about in the asset management the rate issue and the policy change issue, but as part of that best practice in reporting and annual savings analysis, a key piece of that is looking at how has policy changed and to what extent do you need to adjust which rate you're on. In California, you can switch rates as long as your new profile fits within those rate requirements. You know, which rate structure is going to give you the best economics? And so we did do that for them, got them to make that switch, did the analysis that showed them they need to make that switch, and that analysis showed that by adding batteries, and this 6 megawatts is across multiple interconnections, not every interconnection was, you know, load profile, demand profile, made storage a good solution, but some of them did. And so those are the ones that are going to get storage. And that's one way, as part of that, I'm glad you brought this up, because part of active asset management is being on top of the policy changes, the rate structure changes, because that can affect the economics over time.
Yeah, the dovetail on what Rick is saying, the, you know, an asset management strategy is a part of an overall energy management strategy, right? And so the more vigilant that an owner or a PPA customer is on the asset management side is going to inform their wider energy management strategy. And so, you know, having that very current, very robust, detailed analysis of the performance of that system is then going to make the assessments around potential rate changes, potential retrofits or additions to systems, right? Without that key piece around what is the current asset health, where is that performance trending, you know, that'll be a critical piece to answering the bigger energy forecasting or energy management forecasting question.
And David brought up something that I do want to emphasize, which is, you know, we were brought into a situation where we found that a system had been built. It would have been overbuilt, frankly. It was producing more under the net metering rules than was beneficial. They were producing somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000 kilowatt hours a year that were only getting credited at 4 or 5 cents because under California net metering rules, anything in excess of the historical 100% bill only gets a very low wholesale rate. What we were able to show them is that a neighboring facility that, you know, under California's net metering aggregation rule, we could basically offset load at that neighboring facility and get them full retail credit, more like 17, 18 cents a kilowatt hour, as opposed to that, you know, basically losing money on that. So there are a number of different kinds of things that that assessment process, that savings assessment process, can reveal around optimizing the financial value of these systems.
Well, thank you. That's a very, very complete and helpful answer. Just one quick follow-up, question that kind of relates to what I'm seeing locally, and I mentioned it in the last webinar that, you know, we have about twice as much production behind the meter from non-residential systems than residential. And I'm guessing that quite a bit of that is, has been justified based on the tax incentives. And I'm wondering, do you see a potential for aggregators or even community choice aggregators to take the original non-residential customers out and aggregate the supply from the non-residential behind the meter systems? Is that something that is happening anywhere, or is it something that might happen?
Yeah, Jerry, this is a tough one, because as you can imagine, the economics around behind the meter versus wholesale utility scale are very different. And
right.
And so you're talking about, for example, a CCA basically taking over that power supply, right? Is that?
Yeah, and buying it out basically.
Right, buying it out. It all comes down to price, right? If you can buy it out from that PPA owner or lease owner at a price that delivers that power that's somewhat competitive to what your wholesale procurement costs are going to be. And as you know, those wholesale procurement costs now in California are in the low single digits, right? Four or five cents,
right.
In some cases 3 to 4 cents. It's going to be tough to get a price that gets you there. Now, as you know, some CCAs are willing to pay a premium for local power, and that premium may be worth something. And particular, and this now gets really technical, if the power that's being produced is in a location that has grid benefits, right, that are currently not getting monetized, but could be monetized, in the future or, near future, then those other values can be considered, as part of the process. The problem is, since that load is already being offset, it's not like it's going to help the CCA with any kind of load shaping or load shifting, right? They're already getting that benefit just by the fact that it's behind the meter. But if there are some grid services opportunities, then that may add to that, value stream. But the big issue is, can they negotiate a price from the PPA holder that is low enough that the per kilowatt hour cost is competitive to the wholesale price? Make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think the thing that motivated the question was just the fact that, you know, accelerated depreciation is part of the tax law. And I think,
right.
You know, and so, you know, these systems that have been going in over the last 7 years or so are pretty soon or already in some cases fully depreciated.
Right.
So,
that's right.
You know, it's a question of can I get a better deal? And it's a question on the other side of whether, you know, whether somebody else can make a better deal for themselves. You know,
right.
I just was wondering if anybody's really looking into that.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to get the not only the PPA holder, but that the essentially the ground lease holder, right,
yeah,
non-residential
right.
facility to be willing to, you know, let go of whatever benefit they're getting. So
yeah.
Let me just put it this way. It's a creative idea, which, Jerry, you come up with over the years, but I don't know that there's a market right now for this. But it's certainly something to think about.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else?
This is Rick Reeves-Dean at Boston University. I'm just curious as to where your industry is thriving, your industry that is consulting to municipalities on tackling their energy issues in a big way. Is it in the West Coast and then, say, Colorado and then some other parts of the country? Is this national in scope, your industry? How many competitors do you have providing the services you provide?
So we're focused exclusively on California. We haven't really looked beyond that backyard, largely because a solar panel, maybe a solar panel in California and in Colorado or in Massachusetts, but the rate, the tariffs, the policies, the market conditions are extremely unique. And to do this right, to basically provide consulting that gets to, you know, the true value of a system, you have to have a very deep understanding, and frankly, you have to create software tools that, you know, at least at the level of rigor we require, it takes a huge investment. There's really only one true competitor and that we deal with out here, because pretty much everybody else who calls themselves a consultant is really a broker. I'll be just really blunt. They call themselves a consultant, and then they basically have one or two or three vendors who they actually have a financial relationship with of some form, and they basically steer their public agency client to that one or two or three vendors, and that's how they get paid. We don't have any financial relationship or referral relationship or anything with any finance manufacturer or vendor, because we want to make it clear there's no conflict. We are serving the public agency, period. And so there's one other company who operates in that way, but they only do the front end. They only do the analytics and the bid process. They don't do the project management or the asset management to the degree that we do. So it really comes down to, when we're competing, does somebody want the very light version, or does somebody want the more comprehensive version? So that's kind of our situation in California. I don't know about other parts of the country.
Any comments?
Let me add one thing, Sierra. There are companies that do the third-party asset management that we do compete with. Mostly those companies, though, are focused on the utility scale and PPA holder market, as opposed to working on behalf of the client or customer, the public agency client or customer. They mostly do the asset management on behalf of a big bank or finance or development company that owns those PPAs. And while we do that also, the big bulk of our work is with the customer side. And I we have not yet found somebody who's focused in that area, though I think it's going to happen because it's a need, but nobody that we've identified yet.
Anybody else?
Yeah, this is John Walter. I'll ask another question. When you look at asset management, can you, and if you were to cover it early on, that's fine, but if you can sort of dive into a little bit, talk about the different categories, and then what's even more important to me is to talk about the financial return for each one of the categories, if they're all about even or if the number one item has a much higher return for the customer than number two and threes. I'd be interested in your response.
Sure. So, again, earlier in the call, we did a high level of four basic categories. You could rephrase that and maybe expand on that by saying there's the energy management piece, which is the monitoring, the reactive and preventative maintenance. There's the fiscal management piece, which has to do with ensuring the systems are properly insured, making sure that incentives and credits are being properly managed and monetized.
Renewable energy credits,
And then performance reporting, which is the really the key that those other pieces roll up to. And then depending on the relationship of the public entity to the project, if they are an owner, right, then they've got a direct tie to the operations and maintenance strategies, or if they are a PPA client, then it's the asset management piece. There's an added dynamic of managing that PPA provider and making sure that they're executing on their end of the agreements around operations and maintenance, around warranty response, around performance guarantees, things of that nature. And so those are kind of the categories that we bucket these services in. And it's really hard to, you know, break out an ROI modeling on one of those buckets because they really do impact each other. For instance, as I alluded to earlier, a purely O&M-only strategy will oftentimes be a higher price point because it is less informed by the bigger picture of an asset management program. And so you're going to pay a little bit more, right, for that service. And then the forecasting and reporting is going to be intimately tied to a understanding of the maintenance needs of that system, and both from a retrospect and then a prospective look. And so it's really, in my mind, difficult to determine, you know, where's the most important value. If you're only going to do one, what's the one that you're going to pick from an ROI perspective? So,
and the other thing I'd add to that, John, is for, you know, most public agencies, obviously they want to make sure they're getting, you know, the best value out of any investment they make in a maintenance and asset management program. But part of that value is the return, but part of it is more of a risk management perspective. What an asset management program is really more focused on is, quote unquote, insuring against catastrophic risk versus squeezing out that last possible dollar. I'll just give you a very quick example. We got contacted, about 3 months ago by a transit agency who put in a, what we would call a relatively small project, 400 kilowatts shade structure over their bus yard, right? And they got it paid for by the Federal Transportation Administration 9-10 years ago. And they got a new facilities director came in and was doing a assessment of all their facilities, and they reached out and said, you know, we have this solar project, but we're really not sure how it's performing. Well, we sent an engineer out there. The system hadn't actually, it had been basically producing about 10% of its capacity for the last year and a half, right? It had basically had a inverter issue, shutdown issue, it reset, and when it reset, it basically was on a very limited basis, and nobody knew it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, this guy is going to have to report to his, you know, agency board that, you know, we screwed up. So it's really, I mean, at some level, and that's the extreme example, right? But that it is that risk management piece that's a higher level, and particularly for public agencies who have, you know, headline risk as a big part of how they assess the value of things, making sure things don't just truly screw up is much a piece of the calculus when they determine that they want to do a more focused asset management strategy than, you know, that last 10% of ROI. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you. Perfect.
Anybody else? Okay. All right. So Rick and David are going to be talking about a similar topic or same topic on the webinar on July 18th. So I'll be sending information about that out in a few days here. And thanks, everybody, for attending. And Michael Walton, would you want to hang on for a minute? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, do you want to hang on? I'd like to talk to you at the end of this. I tried to. I'll call you right back. Does that work?
Sure.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And Sierra, can I just make one comment? These questions have been great. And so I don't know if it's okay with you, Sierra, but if people have, what we're assuming for the webinar is to drill down into the much more detail around what those practices look like, on a sort of day-to-day, whatever basis, a little more detail there. If you guys have any specific questions or issues you would like us to cover more in depth, can you funnel them to Sierra to funnel to us? Because that'll help us, design the presentation with more relevance. Is that okay? Sierra?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what this is all about. And the one thing I have a request for, I'd like to add on a piece about the PPA buyouts to your description. I think that's
sure.
It's going to be very interesting and very worthwhile, and people will gravitate around that, I'm sure. So I'll do that. I'll give you guys a call in a couple minutes here, too. I just wanted to catch Michael before he disappears again.
Yeah. Hey, so, Sierra, I'm going to be going into a meeting here, so we'll have to touch base a little bit later, if that's okay.
Okay. I'll have to put up the PPA buyout, if that works for you, then.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Online.
Yeah. No, that.
Okay.
We'll make that part of it.
All right. I'm not going to have time to go back and do it again after that because I'm heading out of here in another day.
No, I understand.
So, yeah. Okay, super. Well, thanks so much, everybody. So, again, another really informative and good conversation, and we'll be in touch. Keep looking up for my emails. I'm hoping they're not getting too many of them. I try to make it so it works, but sometimes it's really hard when you have a couple conference calls back-to-back of how many emails you can actually send out. So, okay, we'll talk to you all later, and thanks again. A great presentation.
Great
that
call.
Was excellent. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.